The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1061. It's Tuesday, the 8th of May, 2018. Don't forget, if you're looking for more podcasts to listen, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives, where we've done a new kind of podcast where we interview high profile guests in the world of business. So that's voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, on today's podcast, I have Paul Welch, President and CEO of SDX Energy, that's SDX, and Paul discusses the spud of the Kelvin 1X exploration well in Egypt and the gas discovery at the LMS-1 well in Morocco. Also on the podcast, Malky, normally on a Monday, but it's bank holiday yesterday, of course. We've rolled Malky over because we can't do a week without Malky covering oil and gas sector stocks. And the first one he talks about, actually, is SDX Energy. And, another success for those guys. And their work rate is amazing, very impressive. Also covers Frontier Resources, FRR, Savannah Petroleum, SAVP, Amerisa Resources, AMER, Bahamas Petroleum, BPC, Coro Energy, C-O-R-O, and Solo Oil. That's Solo. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Salt Lake Potash, that's SO4 ticker, Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO, and Volex, VLX. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Welch, President and CEO of SDX Energy, SDX ticker there. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me this morning.
While people were enjoying a rare, sunshiny sort of bank holiday, maybe having a barbecue, going to the beach, you were there busy working. And if our RNS machines were working as well, we'd have received this news yesterday, because you've had two bits of news out in the last couple of days, haven't you?
Yes, we did. We had two bits of news, so we didn't get much of a day off, although I got to say the weather was fantastic, so we certainly enjoyed it. But we had two bits of news this morning. I think before we get there, why don't we just talk about us in general for the people who don't know who we are.
Yeah.
So SDX is we're an E&P producer. We're focused on North Africa. We produce 3,500 barrels a day presently, of which 2,500 comes from Egypt and 1,000 barrels a day equivalent in Morocco. So that's kind of us in a nutshell.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go into these bits of news. Which one are you going to start off with? Because you've got the exploration well in Egypt and also in Morocco, the LMS-1 well.
Go right, we'll start with the exploration well in Egypt because it's simple. We spud Kelvin, which is the follow-up to our recent Ibn Yunus discovery. So this is the second well of a four-well program. Again, between the two wells, we were trying to prove up another 150 BCF of gas. Again, if this is successful, then we will turn this on along with the rest of the development towards the end of 2018. So at the moment, we have one discovery, SD1X. We're going to drill two development locations and turn that on late fourth quarter. Ibn Yunus will then tie into that, and then potentially if Kelvin is successful, that well will then tie back to this facility as well. So we're looking at a fourth quarter startup for production, depending on how many fields we have discovered at that point, so either two or three. So it's a good time. Again, we're happy to get this well spud today, and it's going to be a 25 to 30 day well. Then after, if it's successful, we will test it.
Yeah, and okay, let's go into the news on the gas discovery in LMS-1 then.
So this is really big news, and again, we're really excited about this because the last two wells we drilled in Morocco were two exploration wells. The first one was kind of successful beyond almost our imagination, and the second one, we had high hopes for given the success of the first one, but it came in, I would say, better than we expected. The quality of the section that we penetrated and the thickness was beyond our original expectations. So it's the LMS-1. It was drilled for a deeper horizon that sits just on top of the essentially the bottom seal in the section, so it sits on top of a thing called the nap. Like the previous well, it also has thermogenic gas. So normally in Morocco, we produce what they call biogenic gas, which is essentially all methane and a little bit of nitrogen, so like 99.6% methane and 0.4% nitrogen, no liquids, no heavy ends, none of that. Here, similar to the previous discovery, we have a thermogenic source. So we see, you know, upwards of C5s when we're drilling through this well. And then in this well also, when we looked at the cuttings, there was fluorescence. So we do expect to get some liquids when we produce this. And so we're really looking forward to our test on this well, which we intend to take place within the next 30 days. So at the moment, we're completing the well. The rig is moving off location, and then we're going to come back and test. This well will have gas, and we believe a reasonable amount of condensate or potentially oil. So we're really excited to get this test done, because it opens up a whole new area for us. The area that we're exploring here in the La Mamoun area is about 30 kilometers north of our main development area, so it opens up a whole new province for us, and there's a lot of running room up here, so it couldn't have happened at a better time. So really, really excited to have this well down and have been successful.
Yeah, and it seems that the market has not now sort of starting to take notice, because I've noticed, you know, in the last sort of almost 12 months, the share price is trading in a sort of range, and the last few weeks it's broken out of that, isn't it?
People have finally gotten, aware of us. You know, we had a lot of success, and I think it's kind of like a boiling kettle. Let's just say it's finally burst out, and we're looking forward to that. I think we have a lot of value in the share. It just seems to have been suppressed for some time, or just not noticed. And I think, again, through your efforts and other efforts we have of promoting it and letting people know what's happening, I think people are finally taking notice, which is a great thing. I think there's still a lot of room to run, and so I'm pretty excited to finish this program in Egypt and then test this well in Morocco. So it's exciting times. And I think for other listeners out here, the thing that's really exciting about it is that we have a pipeline in Morocco that we're selling 6 million cubic feet a day of gas through, but it can handle 24. So, you know, part of the objective here is to find, you know, 40 to 50 BCF so we can fill up that line and start selling, you know, that amount of gas. And we'll 4X our revenue from here. And that's the intent over the next couple of years. And so these last two discoveries take us a long way there. And so we're really couldn't be more pleased with the results lately.
Yeah. Well, talking about people who sort of know already, I mean, you've got this a guy called Paris, who's a big fan of you, obviously a shareholder. He has come on to me on social media asking, so could you ask Paul if he's on next? He said, in your presentations of late, you've got a production of 3,457 barrels of oil equivalent a day, which is slightly down on the September presentation, which is 3,812. And he said, I understand your target's 8,000. Are you still on course for this? And if so, will the revenue generated from this be pretty much double where we are now, which is $8 to $9 million dollars a month?
Okay, so that's a good question. So again, the number that we put out there is what we put out on our quarterly results. So we have seen a decrease in production primarily associated with Northwest Kemsa. It has underperformed because of delay in drilling a couple of wells there. So that's why we've seen a decrease between 38 and 3,400. Hopefully when we report out our next quarter, that will have reversed itself. With regards to the target, yes, we are on track to hit our target of 8,000 barrels a day by the end of the year, and that's primarily going to come from turning on the South Asuk discovery prior to the end of the year. With regards to the revenue generation, because we're going to put that on late in 2018, we won't see a kick up in the revenue stream until 2019. And then when, you know, we bring on South Asuk at 50 million a day, that will generate another $9 to $10 million net to us in free cash flow by itself. So that's what we can expect for cash generation post the increase to 8,000 barrels a day, without including any increase in what we could do in Morocco. So that hopefully answers Mr. Paris's question.
I wonder
if he's French. Do you think he's French?
I don't think he is French, no. But okay. It's certainly an exotic name. But quite nice. So, Paul, one last thing to do. If people are listening,
yes,
right now and likes this story but not following you on Vox, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
I'll tell you three reasons. One, we're delivering on our plans. So we're seeing production growth, exploration success, and I think most importantly, cash flow generation. Two, we're very exciting in 2018. We have a lot of activity underway. Currently, we're running 5 rigs. And then I think 3, we're very well positioned financially. We have $30 million in cash. We're generating about $4 million in cash flow generation per month. So we have no intention to go out to the market to raise any additional funds.
Marvelous stuff. Paul, good to chat to you. And hopefully, well, no doubt, you're very busy. So we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, normally on a Monday, but we had a cracking bank holiday Monday, so it's shifted onto a Tuesday. It's Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
I'm very well, thanks, Justin. Slightly, overdid it the weekend, but back on deck this morning, raring to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did. Two lots of barbecues with friends coming over, and you always tend to overeat about 4 times when a barbecue happens, and you know, it's like, and a few drinks as well, but I feel like I need to go on a fast for a couple of days now, but it's nice to have, at last, you know, a week bank holiday where we can go out and, you know, actually wear shorts and t-shirt, you know, nice.
I know, absolutely right.
But while we were enjoying it, Malky, in fact, on the podcast today, we Paul from SDX, they were achieving more success again.
I know. I mean, it's obviously on my list of stocks to cover this morning. It's getting a bit boring. People will think that I'm, just always talking about SDX. But I am going to mention the oil price, which is, it's a very crucial day for the oil price, and 1-2 other stocks as well.
Yeah, go for it then. What's first?
Well, the oil price obviously did rise over the weekend, and it went through the $70 price level for West Texas and $75 a barrel for Brent crude, which, is important. These companies are the ones that are doing well and they're making, serious money. So that's good. And it's a big day because clearly the market is expecting an announcement from President Trump about the Iran situation. I got the back of my bare leg slapped at the weekend by a number of people because, I wrote in the blog at the end of the week saying that, I thought it may well be worth a further look at the deal. Obviously, those people in Iran and obviously with all the related people think that they're not doing anything wrong at all. So let's see how that goes later today. The oil price will come off a bit if he changes his mind. If he doesn't, then we're headed towards $80, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
But, let's see. These guys make, the good guys are making a lot of money, whether it's 70 or 80.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, just going back to SDX, I think last time they spoke, their all-in cost is way below $10 a barrel, So.
It's cheap. Ridiculous. I mean, I'll kick off with SDX, but you're right about the cost in Morocco, where the government have set a price per MCF of gas of $10, with the intention of pushing that up to $12. But their costs are, my guess, is about $0.50 per MCF. So it's probably the highest margin. Natural gas, hydrocarbons, pretty much anywhere. But, they've had another discovery again today. This is LMS-1 in the La La Mamuna exploration prospect, which has come in significantly better than pre-drill expectations or estimates, as they've discovered this gas in an exploration prospect that had not previously been penetrated in a similar structural location. The interesting thing about this is that there are signs that there might be some condensate or light liquids in there, which would be extremely valuable. Not only would it be a great gas discovery and they'll be able to put it onto production for gas, it opens up a whole bunch of opportunities in that part of the world. And remember, these two wells, which were number 8 and 9 in the 9-well program, were the exploration wells, not expected necessarily to come in, much, much smaller chance of success. But they've both come in, they proved that the program overall, with 7 out of 9 successes, was excellent. And, it opens up what the company call an excellent new play, or an excellent significant new play in the Garb Basin, This company is on target now to double production this year, and their target is to quadruple production in the medium term. So with plenty of customers around in Morocco, production picking up in the short and medium term, with the announcement that they've already they're moving on in Egypt. We expect, you know, they've announced that that they are started drilling the Kelvin 1X exploration well, which has a 50 BCF target in South Dusuk. I think South Dusuk in Egypt could also be significantly better than expected. Difficult to see where it's going wrong for STX, which is in very good nick.
Yeah, and do you know what? I just checked, when I mentioned to Paul, I said in the last couple of weeks, people have started to realise, you know, the amount of success you're having and how that will translate, I think, to the bottom line, because the share price, literally, after trading in a range for almost a year between 44 pence and 52 pence, it's broken up now. It's now 70 pence, which is above a previous high that it hit back in, almost this time last year. It's from May last year, so I think it's starting to re-rate, finally, you know?
Well, it's been one of my preferred stocks, as you know. It's top of the bucket list numbers at the end of last year, and doing it again this month. But there's a very good reason for that. Keep finding hydrocarbons in both their key areas, with plenty of upside, lots of clients, high-margin gas in Morocco, significantly increased production in Egypt. As I've said about this company before, what is not to like?
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous. Okay, what's next, Malky?
Yeah, there are one or two other stocks I wanted to mention. I'm interested in Frontera Resources, as you know.
Yeah.
This one I looked at 2 or 3 years ago. Didn't like the management. I wasn't sure about whether the, you know, there were plenty of bullish people around, but I wasn't sure that they were right. Didn't get a meeting with the company. Had an unsatisfactory conference call with them, and then about a year ago, well, summer of last year, I met the new management, and I got quite impressed with what was going on there. And as you know, they took me out there in February to look what was going on, I'm really, you know, very positive that that things are looking very good. They've got this, what was a 3-well program, and they're already putting T45 and Dino 2 on extended well test. They're sidetracking on the well at T39, and now they look like they're going to try and do a fourth well in the program, because they've applied for a license to drill or sidetrack Nico 1, which is the fourth in the project. You know, they're testing obviously UD2, which was the gas complex in Sari Kevi, and last I heard that was very positive. The bottom line with Frontera is that I think it was right to revisit it. It had been forgotten about for a very long time. Historically, it hasn't had a very good publicity, and there's been good reasons for that. But I've managed to be there. I've looked at it, kicked the tires with my own fair feet. And as I said, when I came back in February, I thought this is one for the notebook. And it's proving to be the case. It is also worth noting, for anyone who is in town tomorrow afternoon or early evening, is that there is a shareholder event tomorrow night, and the management will be on hand to discuss with anyone who wants to come and join them for a glass of something tomorrow afternoon, early evening.
Marvellous stuff. FRR, marvellous. Anything else, Malky?
Quick word on Savannah, Petroleum, SAVP, not to be confused, and because they've spudded the second of their 3-well program at AMDI-1 in Niger. Target there is the same you've seen Socor alternances and the upper Socor alternances as they discovered in the first well at Bashaya. It's very exciting there. I think that because they had such a success in the first well. This second well has probably been de-risked to a significant extent, and therefore things are looking up. And of course, you know, there's been, you know, the shares were suspended for a long time. They came back having done a big raise, so there was obviously a bit of indigestion in the marketplace. But it looks really good to me. So on the exploration front in Niger, I'm very excited because it's now been de-risked. Clearly, the Seven Energy acquisition is settling in quite nicely with... you know, they're going to have super production there to offset that, and midstream profitable business as well. So, you know, I'm enormously positive about this. And it shouldn't pass note that the company are doing an analyst visit in a couple of weeks' time to Niger and Nigeria. I don't know how many analysts are going, but if there's a decent number of analysts, I think that... there will be continued excitement, so keep that one very much on the front of the notebook.
Yeah, do you know what? They remind me a bit. You know, the management there, Paul and Andrew. You know, SDX and SAVP are not dissimilar, I think. You know, they both are very switched on individuals, quite ambitious, and they know exactly what they're all about. Very two professional companies there. They're very similar, I think, and in ways, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with it at all, actually. I mean, they're both driven. They don't say anything without thinking first. They don't, you know, overdo it in terms of the message without being fully backed up. And, you know, should the second well in Niger come in, we'll clearly be looking for further. And, you know, I think there's lots and lots of upside. Yeah, as I say, you know, there's a bit of indigestion there because they did a huge placing.
Yeah.
But very supportive shareholders and very positive indeed for Savannah.
Marvellous. Anything else, Malky?
Yeah, two or three quick words about companies on the bounce. Amerisur, noticed they had an April production update there. The initial feeling from the market looked like it was slightly disappointing because the numbers were slightly down on last month. But I do know that this was due to some upgrade work at Platanillo, which is there in effect in to... give long-term increase in Platanillo production, and it's very sensible reservoir management. If people do think that this is bad news, they've got it wrong, and I expect them to hit their targets of 7,000 barrels a day in the short term, and you know 12,000 barrels in the medium term. Cummins are in town. And then next week or the week after, John Wardle will be doing his big presentation, and I expect that to be very positive. There's plenty of upside in Amerisur. Yeah. Need to mention Bahamas Petroleum as well, because it's a big holding by the retail, who got enormously excited.
Yeah, Bahamas went bananas, didn't it?
Yeah, it did indeed, and for very good reasons in a way. The exclusive and confidential agreement which they announced with a major oil company, and I haven't worked out who it is yet, for all this detailed technical examination of the evaluation of the licenses in the Bahamas. And I think that... that's for 3 months, up to 6 months. They get paid $250,000 a month, so that whatever happens, they'll come out of it well. On the upside, it is clearly extremely good news that a major has been prepared to put some money down, and if it comes good and they see what they like, what they see, they will inevitably do. You know, get on and do stuff, which will mean that the share price will go from strength to strength. They've always said they needed, you know, a partner, tick, funding, 50-50, tick, and if it's a yes, then hire a rig and drill a hole, tick, and then it's all in the lap of the gods. Just watch out that, you know, for the Bahamas shareholders that who, you know, can only see good in this company, is that if for any reason this detailed technical evaluation of the licenses was to come to nothing and the major were to walk away, the chances of doing a deal with any other major would suddenly disappear. This is still high risk, potentially very, very high reward, and the Bahamas shareholders know exactly what they're in for, so it's going to be a lot of fun for them over the next few months.
Marvellous stuff. And,
directors or people starting or whatever, just to watch out for. One for The Notebook is obviously that James Menzies, or Mingus, has started at Coro as CEO. Mm-hmm. This is very exciting. Coro, which is obviously the former Italian assets of Sound, and is kicking off with a programme of hopefully acquisitions in Southeast Asia, which is where John Menzies made his name. I expect very exciting stuff from him. So he's underway now. And the other thing that your people should watch out for is that Solo Oil, mm-hmm. which is with Aminex in Africa, in Tanzania, John Fitzpatrick, who is a very much a mover and a shaker, has moved in there on the board as a non-executive. I suspect that he's not there for the good of his health. There's been a lot going on at Solo lately, and we know that there's things going on at Aminex. Mm-hmm. The fact that John Fitzpatrick has gone on the board is significantly interesting. He's set up his own business called Gneiss Energy Partners, where he's the founding partner. He's also a senior advisor to Rock Rose, which has had a very good time there. So some very exciting things coming up for Solo, I suspect.
Marvellous stuff. Marky, thanks for that. And any others at all?
That's all for the time being, Justin. Thank you.
That's plenty. Lovely. Well, Marky, hopefully back to our normal day next week on Monday, and I will speak then.
Look forward to it, Justin. Thanks for your call.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all right, Al?
I'm fine, Justin. I'm just recovering from a bank holiday weekend, which includes a bit of sunburn, lots of barbecues and copious amounts of beer. So, yes.
Yeah. You know what? It's unusual. We have a bank holiday where we can go outside and have barbecues, but I think the effects of which is somewhat negative. I've had just too much. I think I've had about four days worth of calories in 2 days over that doing that barbecue. So and that drink as well. So yeah, I need a bit of a fast, I think.
I know, mate. I know. But the thing that made me laugh yesterday was seeing some of the pictures on the news in the evening of Southend Beach, and literally that there was no space there at all. People were just sort of crammed in elbow to elbow. It was a proper old English seaside resort summer picture. You know, everyone on there with from the knotted handkerchiefs on their head, you know, to screaming children with ice cream. It's proper old-fashioned English seaside bank holiday scene.
Yeah, but they're saying that you got to be wary of going into the water. It's still pretty cold, you know, and people are just getting really hot, running in and almost having heart attacks. It's like, oh, and running straight back out twice as fast.
So, and all these people that never sit in the sun, you know, completely sort of stripped down and, looking like lobsters. But there we go.
Right, so stocks-wise, Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, looking at three stocks for you today, Justin. I want to talk about another service as well called Money Back CFDs, but we'll come to them later. But firstly, I want to look at Salt Lake Potash, which we have spoken about before. Now, just to recap, Salt Lake Potash own nine lakes in Western Australia. They're salt lakes, and the beauty of these the lakes is that it's an almost inexhaustible supply of potash, because you can literally drive over the top with a tractor and almost a plow and dig this stuff up and put it on the back of the lorry and take it to market, because the infrastructure around these nine lakes are very good. When it rains, the nutrients and the potash that you've taken up is effectively replaced due to the chemical process that produces potash in the first place. So These nine lakes called the Goldfields Project are lakes that are well established as potash producers, but it's only recently that the infrastructure has been developed to take all this into account. Now the projects have developed. The Salt Lake have been working with a company called Blackfields Resources to establish the quality and the potential of Lake Way, which is one of the main lakes among the nine. Earlier this year, they also announced a takeoff agreement with Mitsubishi Australia to take the potash to develop for fertilizers and other applications. This morning, a company called Align Research have published a note on the developments to date, and just really bullet pointing the key points. Align Research, looking at the global picture for agriculture, see what they call mega trends in demand for fertilizers and applications for crop applications, and Salt Lake Potash with its vast mineral resources is absolutely ideally placed to become a major supplier of the future. It says the Goldfield Salt Lake Project covers a vast area with very low operating costs and also capital intensity in a safe jurisdiction, which is very key for this. It's a world-class project. First cash flow is expected in 2020 with something like just under 300 million Aussie dollars in annual revenues from 2024. So this isn't too far away. And if we look at what's happened with Sirius Minerals over the past umpteen years, you know, that project's taken many years to come to fruition. So this is a relatively near-term project in comparison to that. Most interesting is that Salt Lake shares are currently trading at the Epico, by the way, is SO4. So you can look this up. The most interesting aspect, I think, of all for this, for people considering buying the stock and already holding the stock, is that taken the developments and the de-risking of the project that's taken place to date, and obviously the Mitsubishi takeoff agreement, the net present value suggests an upside of 333%, with a conservative valuation somewhere around 132 pence. So compared to the 30 pence that where we are now, there's a significant amount of upside on offer. Clearly, we're a few years away until the company starts to generate revenue from the lakes. But compared to the Sirius Minerals project, the potash at the Salt Lake Goldfields project is far easier to extract, far easier to take to market. So this company's got a very exciting future, and I think as a medium term, longer term investment, it could be one that could really be a shining star in your portfolio in years to come.
Yeah, when you mentioned that Hitachi deal, when was that? Was that back in when
did Mitsubishi?
Yeah, Mitsubishi, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
When was that? Was in March, was it?
Back in March, mid-March.
The share price went from, literally, it's funny, isn't it? It was dropping down to like a level of 24 pence then, but literally shot up to 32 pence off the back of that. So,
So the stock is very much stabilised. You know, there's a good sort of, the current level offers a very good opportunity to buy in. It's been trading at this level for a while now. But I think as the project becomes more and more de-risked, and they go and the data comes back from the other lakes, then the project is going to be further de-risked. And of course, all the time we're moving towards the production and initial revenues.
Marvellous. Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, secondly, Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO, Epicode. Of course, we've spoken about Advanced on many occasions. Now, of course, just to recap for listeners, Advanced Oncotherapy is developing the light machine. Some years ago, it acquired a company called ADAM, A-D-A-M, from CERN, the Hadron Collider people in Switzerland. So they're using the Hadron Collider technologies to build a machine that basically will treat cancer tumors. But rather than traditional radiotherapy, which is a sledgehammer to crack a nut, this is a finely tuned beam of particles that can treat tumors that are located in critical areas such as the brain and close to other organs. And of course, particularly for treating young children, proton beam therapy has already been well proven in the past with several well documented cases. If you want to go and see Advanced Oncotherapy in the UK, in Harley Street, they're building a treatment centre. It'll be their flagship centre with a proton beam therapy machine. That is expected to start treating superficial tumours by late 2019. So the company is moving towards bringing the machine into the market through the various testing processes. And today they announced that they had struck an agreement with the UK Government Science and Technology Facilities Council to establish a UK testing and assembly site for its light machine in Cheshire, which is home to the UK's Accelerator and Science and Technology Centre. So, you know, it's incremental developments. We're moving closer to production, and clearly, with Advanced Oncotherapy, it's a long-term investment. But it's the technology is fantastic, and once it's in the market and treating tumours, it's going to save a lot of UK families in particular from having to raise the money to go to other countries, particularly the USA, where proton beam therapy is more readily accepted and treatment is more widely available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the share price is still over that 200-day moving average, which is quite bullish. And like I said, it went down to 10 pence, didn't it? Just below 10 pence. So,
well, they did, yes, but they'd also fallen back a few weeks ago as well.
Do you know what? Look at that. They fell back to, guess where? To the 200-day moving average, which is at 35.6 pence. It fell out of that, bounced off it, and now it's back up there. But the highest it's been pretty much is around at the 60 pence level. There's a bit of resistance there, so we'll be interested to see if we can get above that 60 pence. If it does, obviously it's going higher. If it doesn't, it's going back for a breather, I think.
Well, I think that's it. But as you say, I think from a technical standpoint, the share, you know, is becoming quite predictable now, with the 200-day moving average as support. It bounced a lot higher from there. Also, at the time it made that bounce, a broker note was published as well, which just detailed the developments in the company to date. So that clearly pushed the share price back higher. But with AVO, we're going to see a series of incremental developments over. During the coming year, all the way up to the completion of the Harley Street premises, and obviously the testing first the initial superficial tumours with the completed machine.
Yeah, marvellous. Anything else, Al?
Yes. Also, want to bring everyone's attention to a company called Volex. The epic code is VLX.
Do they make dodgy watches?
No, they don't. Rolex, the low cost alternative to Rolex. Yes. Rolex. I suppose you classify them as one of these companies that wouldn't necessarily grab the attention like an exciting sort of mining company or revolutionary technology such as Advanced Oncotherapy. But Volex manufacture power cords, harness assemblies, electronic fiber optic cable assemblies, and so on. They've got manufacturing bases all over the world, and it's run by the chairman Nat Rothschild. But the company has delivered 3 years of declining sales, but in April this year, it announced its annual figures, and for the first time, it published a return to growth of around 5%, which is significant because the company also announced earlier in January that it had decided to move to AIM to cut its costs down to give it greater flexibility in pursuing growth and partnership. On the back of the cost saving activities and the move to AIM, net cash improved at the year end just under $6 million at the half year point to just under $10 million at the full year. And the company said it was going to use those additional funds to pursue organic and accretive acquisitions to grow the business. And indeed, following that, at the end of last month, it announced the acquisition of MC Electronics. But quite an interesting chart here, because the shares fell back around Christmas time and started to then pick up in the new year. And this was picked up last week by the VectorVest platform, as you know, my colleague David Paul. We discussed the stocks that he publishes notes on a regular basis. VectorVest have a growth have an earnings growth rate metric, and currently, despite the increase in the share price since then, it logged last week a growth rate of 34%, which is very. What they class as excellent on a scale of on the scales that VectorVest use. So VectorVest currently have a stock price valuation of £1.12 versus the current 76 pence. So there is some upside to come here, and I think given the improved cash position, given the improvement and the reduction in operating costs, Volex looks to be a pretty solid buy for the coming year to 18 months. So
marvelous. VLX, do your own research, everyone. Anything else?
I said at the start, I wanted to just to go through a company that we've been asked to sort of bring people's attentions to. Now, of course, everyone's well aware of PPI. Everyone's well aware of the fact that if you had insurance on a loan or any financial arrangement in the past 10 years, your bank's probably charged you too much for insurance, and therefore you can claim back on PPI. Well, a company called Money Back CFDs, and the website is moneybackcfds.com, as you can probably gather. They have taken a look at the market for CFDs and spread betting in regard to advisory broking, and most people that they've come across in this market who've traded these high risk trading products via an advisory broker have lost money. And in many instances, the individuals that they spoke to or are speaking to are wholly unsuited to trading these sort of instruments. So the FCA and ESMA have over the past year criticised the product and also the behaviour of some of these advisory brokers, and the regulators are in the process of taking action. Money Back CFDs have put a program together to help traders who've lost money via these advisory brokers to reclaim some of those funds. So, quite simply, if you have lost money in the past through trading CFDs and spread bet through advisory brokers, go to the moneybackcfds.com website, or there is an article on the Brand UK website under the News and Views heading where you can basically read a brief summary of what I've just described, and then you can basically register and supply your details, and if you want someone to get in touch, they will do that.
Marvellous. But so essentially, if you've used an advisory brokerage and they've lost money through CFDs,
So if you sign up with an advisory broker and you're advised to trade CFDs at spread betting, now the thing is, if you're an experienced trader, you understand the rest of CFDs and spread betting, that's fine. But the the FCA and the, and ESMA have established that a lot of the people that were that signed up for this weren't aware of the risks, and in fact, in many cases, were wholly unsuited to undertaking the process. So the FCA and ESMA have criticised the product and the brokers, and they're taking in the process of taking action to tighten the side of the industry up. But money-back CFDs will help you reclaim if you've lost funds this way. You can get in touch with money-back CFDs, and they will help you to reclaim some of those funds that you've lost. So, you know, this is quite significant. It's a part of the industry that needed cleaning up, and money-back CFDs are one of the or they're at the forefront of this movement.
Yeah, you know, I was just hoping that I'd call them up and get some money back on some of the investments I've made off my own back.
No, that'd be nice. No, that's the thing. You know, if you've opened a CFD platform account or a spread money account and you've done it by yourself, then that's that. Although, you know, perhaps the controls, the process of signing up and the KYC checks and everything else that should be undertaken will be undertaken in a more, should we say, a more rigorous procedure will be applied to that process. And also, But particularly with the advisory broking process, the FCA has established that a lot of those checks and the process that should have been undertaken, it fell short in a number of areas. And as a result, a lot of people that were wholly unsuited to it went in, put their money in, and have lost money. So money-back CFDs can help you recover some of these funds.
Marvellous. Cheers, Al. And listen, we'll speak next week, fella.
Indeed, mate. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Ascent Resources, AST. At four, Asia Met Resources, ARS. At three, EVR Holdings, EVRH ticker there. At two, Big Four today on their phase three clinical trial, sort of not meeting the end point, Farren Pharmaceuticals. That's FARN. And the number one most followed company was a blog I wrote on the weekend, Cora Gold. Worth reading. I do hold stock. Of course, do your own research. It's not intended as investment advice. But C-O-R-A. That's C-O-R-A, not C-O-R-O, which is Coro Energy, which is another very popular stock doing well. But C-O-R-A, Cora Gold. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Frontera Resources, Operations and Corporate Update. At four, Highlands Natural Resources, spudding of 6 and 7 wells at East Denver. At three, SDX Energy, spud of Kelvin 1X exploration well in Egypt. At two, SDX Energy again, gas discovery at LMS well 1 in Morocco. And of course, I spoke to Paul earlier. And the number one most liked RNS was from Prospects Oil and Gas. That's PXOG, Portfolio Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.